Welcome to DSO Overflow. I'm Glenn Wilson.
And I'm his co-host, Steve Jaguerre. Glenn and I are the organizers of the DevSecOps London Gathering, a monthly community meetup for anybody involved in factoring security into their software delivery, which is just about everybody.
The DSO Overflow podcast is an extension of that meetup in the form of a relaxed discussion with our guests around the topics that feature in our monthly meetup.
DSO Overflow wouldn't be possible without the support of our listeners and, of course, our sponsors. Prisma Cloud. Cloud-native architectures have radically changed the needs of security operations and development teams as attackers capitalize on this ever-evolving landscape. Prisma Cloud breaks down silos, allowing for true DevSecOps workflows, full supply chain visibility, and enhanced responsiveness, ensuring complete security coverage across the entire application lifecycle. And Dynaminet, a consultancy and training organization specializing in DevOps and agile security. And of course, a big thanks to musician Joshua Mann for our amazing DSO Overflow theme music.
In this episode, we invited Nigel Kirsten, a chief tech strategist at Puppet, where he is deeply involved in the company's DevOps initiatives. Nigel regularly speaks around the world about the adoption of DevOps in the enterprise and IT organizational transformation. Here, Nigel shares his thoughts on DevOps adoption, the role of security in DevOps, and clues from the State of DevOps report that will help organizations on their DevOps journey. Let's have a listen. So welcome everybody to the DSO Overflow podcast for January 2022. This month we have a very special guest from Puppet. We have Nigel Kirsten. Nigel, welcome. Please say hello to everybody.
Hello, it's great to be here and looking forward to the first podcast of the year.
Excellent. Steve, we've got a number of questions that we want to fire off at Nigel.
Yes, we do.
And I guess you've got a good opener for Nigel.
Well, the easy softball opener is for people who don't actually know who you are. In the unlikely event that is the case, can you just do a quick intro of yourself, please?
Sure. So Nigel Kirsten, so currently field CTO at Puppet, which means I'm basically CTO of the services and customer success side of the business. I've been hanging around the DevOps movement for the last 11, 12 years, joined Puppet quite a while ago. My background before that was I was an SRE at Google, and before that I ran large-scale IT at an art and design college in Australia, where my users were both academics and artists.
And you are, among other things you might be famous in our industry for, you're known for the State of DevOps report, and I was wondering if you could give us just a bit of a history of that. It's its 10th iteration, I believe, recently, 6 months ago, but nevertheless.
Yep.
And can you kind of tell us how that started and how you got to where we are now?
Yeah. So the original idea was all Alana Brown, who I think is one of the great sort of unsung heroes of the whole DevOps movement because she's been so publicity shy for a long, long period. But we essentially, when we were at Puppet, like 2011, I think it was, we realized everyone was talking about DevOps at DevOps days. There was this real coterie of folks being really excited and masses of momentum. And yet most of the industry was sort of having this vague idea of what it was, but didn't really understand the movement because, you know, you talk to Patrick and a lot of the sort of progenitors of the movement, they didn't want to build a manifesto. They didn't want to follow the agile thing of, you know, have a cabal go off to the mountaintop and come down with these graven stone tablets of thou shalt do this and thou shalt not do this. And I think that's been really great for the movement. It's allowed it to sort of be really flexible and sort of mutate as different environmental factors change, but also meant that at the beginning, no one had any idea about what it was. So Alana had the idea of, well, let's actually talk to folks who think they're doing DevOps or are interested in it, and let's just do a quick survey. And it was a really lightweight piece of work. It was like a month or two of sending out questions to Puppet community, DevOps Days folks, and just going, what do you think, you know, is what is this whole DevOps business? And if you remember back to those early days, this was when we had, you know, John Willis and Damon Edwards coming out with CAMS, and, you know, then later Jez Humble called it CAMS. Like, everyone was coming up with models to try and work out, how do we describe this messy socio-technical mix of humans and people and process and technology? So I think that was really, really interesting. Got lots and lots of responses, and particularly folks like Gene Kim, who also lived in Portland, where Alana and I lived, Portland, Oregon, USA, at the time. He got really excited because he'd been following, what was it called? Visible Ops, for those people who delve into ancient history, where he was sort of trying to do something relatively similar, go, let's take ITIL and let's like really slim it down to like the absolute, like let's get rid of all the sort of bureaucracy and orthodoxy and just go, what are the core ideas of the center? So Jean got involved in the next year. James Turnbull, who a bunch of you might know from many of the tech books that he's written, got involved. Then Jez Humble, and I'm trying to remember through the whole timeline of this. Jez got involved. Nicole Forsgren got involved. We did a bunch of reports together. They ended up forming Doro, but they started doing a lot of consulting and sort of licensed IP assessments of organizations around a lot of this sort of work. And then at one point, where it's got a little confusing, but Doro got to end up getting acquired by Google, and we split off for a couple of years with separate state DevOps reports. But we all get along really well, and you know, I think many of us are sort of built on the work that each other have done.
Like you mentioned Gene Kim there, and among many other celebrities in the actual movement of DevOps. They wrote a book called The DevOps Handbook, which has just recently been republished, the second edition. I'm guessing that the DevOps report that you have written has fed into what Gene Kim wrote.
Yeah, and I don't want to sit there and sort of claim credit for lots of work other people have done, because you know, if you've ever written a book, you realize, you know, the ideas and the first drafts is the first 90%, and then you have at least one other 90% that you have to get done to actually get the book out the door. So without diminishing any of the work, I think, you know, John Willis, Damon Edwards, Gene Kim, like all of us have been interested in this space for a while. And so things that Gene wanted to investigate as part of the State DevOps report, they're really of huge interest to him, like how are CI/CD pipelines affecting, you know, actual productivity and financial metrics of an organization. All of these things just end up swimming together. And I think we all read each other's stuff. We all get influenced by each other's stuff. And as far as I can tell, no one's particularly precious about it, which I think is actually one of the great things about this community.
I'm going to ask you a very freeform question. And it came off the back of, I think, I can't remember where it is in the report, but it's when there's a quote from Patrick Dubois where he says, I can finally say, define what DevOps is in one line. And hopefully you don't have that in front of you. But I'm wondering, can you define DevOps for our listeners?
Yeah, so I think one of the great things, and to give a little bit of a sidetrack, is one of the great things we did with the 10th anniversary report last year was I decided to take a little bit of a historical perspective. And Patrick's always a little difficult to pin down. Like the guy is full of, you know, lots of amazing ideas, very resistant to the sort of cult leader pressure that he got around the whole DevOps movement. And so I interviewed him and we just got all these really, really great quotes from him about what he was thinking about the early days of DevOps. And I keep meaning to do the work and publish the sort of 2 hours of conversation we had into some sort of more easily consumable form. For me, DevOps is really, it's about reducing friction between the different parts of the organization that deliver software. And for all of us who've worked in IT for a long time, like that's the whole problem. You're like, I have the context, but someone else has the authority. They have the authority, but they have no context. So you end up doing all this work of packaging up context around the work you're trying to do, passing it on to someone in an imperfect vehicle, you know, usually written language prose via a change request or something. And then we don't get the result that we actually were looking for in the first place. And I think, you know, DevOps movement originally started off with, there was very much, you know, you have ops people who are in charge of the running application but can't modify it. And you have devs who can modify it but have no responsibility or accountability for it at all.
So the follow-on question, the logical follow-on, which is actually addressed in a kind of humorous section. It's not intended to be humorous. Humorous because of a certain answer by a certain Mike that is defining what DevSecOps is, which is also the name of this podcast, where he says, if we keep putting every responsibility people should do in the name, we'll run out of room for the hashtags. DevSecOps is dumb. What do you think DevSecOps is? Not to set you up.
So I have to say, when, you know, I take a very, you know, big tent approach to DevOps, and when the whole DevSecOps movement first started, I sort of thought it was a bit dumb. I was like, really, do we need another name? We were meant to be including security people in this conversation the whole time. And then at some point, one of my friends pointed out, they were like, you realize you sound just like all of the ornery old Unix greybeards when you brought out DevOps, going, that's just doing operations properly. Why do you need a name for this? And I think, you know, I had a really great conversation with Andrew Schaefer at some point where we were talking about the importance of signs and symbols. And the more I've worked with you know, because I didn't work in enterprises for a long time. I worked in public universities, which are their own particular brand of dysfunction. And I worked at Google. But then when I started Puppet, like a lot of our customers are pretty traditional enterprise folks who have a very different sort of shape problem. And the thing that became apparent to me was labels and signs and symbols are really important. And if you're in a big organization that's trying to change, there's a reason we keep reaching for these agile transformation, DevOps, lean, like all of these labels. You need something to be able to communicate change and the fact that you want to do something differently and work in a different way at scale. Because you can't keep, you know, I have 4 pages of nuance or a 15-minute conversation every time I introduce this term. It just doesn't actually work to get things done. And I think, you know, originally when DevSecOps appeared, I was like, this is really stupid. We don't actually need another name for this. But I do think the problems are fundamentally different. And one of the, you know, in many ways, I think DevOps was badly named. You know, it's one of the hard problems in computer science is naming things well. And DevOps caught on because I think it had a really visceral impact. But the connotations were that it doesn't include security. It doesn't include compliance. And so I've actually come around to the viewpoint that DevSecOps is really useful. Now, I spend more time, I guess, in the DevOps than the DevSecOps space, but I tend to think there's two broad definition groups that are actually quite different when it comes to DevSecOps. One is integrating security practices into the sort of a mature DevOps practice, where you start using infrastructure as code, you're doing policy as code, and security folks start being invited into the room and going, hey, you know what would be better than checking all of this stuff in production? Why don't we work together on defining the state that will just get enforced in production? You know, and that's sort of at its most simplistic level. But I also think there's a very different kind of DevSecOps, which is much more about bringing the sort of philosophy of like, it's about the interaction between dev and security more than it is the interaction with security and DevOps, if that kind of makes sense. It's about bringing security practices earlier into the development lifecycle. And I think this is maybe one of the challenges with the whole DevSecOps space, that those are two quite different things. And if you live in one of those worlds, the other one doesn't make a lot of sense to you.
I also think there's a third element. I don't know if you'd agree with this or not, but I think the third element is actually the security teams themselves are stuck in an older way of working. And therefore, DevSecOps could also mean putting DevOps into security.
I think that's a really good point. Like, and in many ways, you know, before DevOps caught on as a term, many of us were on there was an Agile System Administration mailing list, which Ari Pinar, who wrote M Collective and then Coria, and has, like, I think done a lot of really, really great work behind the scenes for a lot of folks. You know, Andrew Schaefer, James, Luke Kniez, a lot of us were all hanging out in this Agile sysadmin. And for whatever reason, Agile sysadmin just doesn't have any pizzazz. There's no sizzle to it. It's all steak, you know, and no one actually adapted as a term. But I think what you're saying there is that, and I totally agree, that there's a third way of looking at DevSecOps, which is bringing an agile and people-centric mindset to the operations of security itself, rather than the sort of interactions with other departments. That's a really good point.
Okay, I'm going to just kind of jump straight into the what felt like the core message within the State of DevOps report, and that was the idea of being stuck in the middle. And I think that that simple statement, there's a lot to unpack there. I mean, first, just defining what is the middle, and that could come from the way that the information and the survey is drawn out. Like, I've read about the 5 stages of DevOps evolution, and is that where we are? Is that what we mean by middle? So maybe you can help us define what middle looks like.
Sure. So one of the things that we found a couple of years ago was that we're doing all of this writing, all of this research around DevOps, and I'd talk to customers, I'd talk to folks at conferences, and particularly I think what I think of as the dark matter of IT, like the people who aren't at conferences, the people who aren't listening to these podcasts, like for every one of us, you know, there's another 10 people who it's just their job, which is great. You know, people should have jobs that don't dominate their lives. They get paid well, they go home, they have good health insurance, everything's kind of fine. But a lot of those folks would be like, look, I work in a really traditional big organization. You're describing to me the shining light on the hill of, you know, small cross-functional teams singing kumbaya, happily shipping software to production with zero stress. But then, like, they were like, what do I do first? How do I go from where I am now to where you are, to what you're describing? So I'm really skeptical of maturity models, because I think they carry with them these implications that you get to the final stage and you defeat the boss and then I am now mature and I am done. But I just don't think that's how it works. So we decided to call it an evolutionary model to try and indicate that, you know, the environmental pressures are constantly changing and it's about getting yourself to a state where you can evolve more quickly, which I think sounds a little wanky and pretentious, but we just wanted to get a little away from the maturity model. So we started mapping this out. And, you know, the beginning is, you know, you're starting to replace some of your ticket-driven operations like, hey, Bob, can I get a server? Sure, Jane, you know, like, I'll give you one. With automation, you're starting to use config management, you might be starting to use APIs and scripting, all the way up to the sort of fifth stage, which is, you know, fully automated incident response, for example, which I think is relatively simple to say, but to get there requires, you know, people, process, tooling, all of those sort of things to operate at a pretty high level. So we started doing that a few years ago, but then we noticed that we're seeing over and over again each year that while the people at the sort of low levels of evolution were definitely, that group was getting smaller and smaller as the message was expanding out to traditional organizations. And the top level was definitely getting bigger and bigger, but there was this really solid sort of immovable chunk of like 60%, 70% each year of folks who just weren't really progressing to the higher levels. And one way of looking at this is that the lowest levels of automation, lowest levels of DevOps evolution is really about, you know, you're just getting started on the journey. In the middle is where you've optimized for your team. Like your team is doing a good job. The rest of the organization hasn't changed a lot. But within your team, you're working in an agile way, you're getting lots of work done, you're adhering to these principles. But at the higher levels of evolution is where the actual organization is behaving like that. And you don't just have these disconnected islands of DevOps success, but everything's kind of humming along and you're not having impedance mismatches in terms of how people work. So that far top level is where we're finding year after year that people are just finding it difficult to get beyond. And so we had a bunch of hypotheses, and that's what we looked to investigate last year.
Is that top group, was it also akin to being a learning organization? So we often talk about learning organizations that are constantly evolving to improve their processes all the time. Would you say that that top group fits that model, fits that pattern?
Absolutely. Because I think what we've seen that, you know, we saw that moving from low to medium, one of the core characteristics was, do you start just reusing stuff you've done within your team? And like, this sounds a little insane, but, you know, in IT, we're terrible at this. We, you know, we constantly are rebuilding the same things over and over again, whether it comes to software or even patterns. So we're seeing that folks in the middle level, they had that learning ability within their team because they would go, let's reuse this pattern. Let's examine it as a group. Let's work at how we can improve it and keep building upon it. But at the higher levels is where the whole organization is behaving like that. And team A can do something. It becomes visible to team B, and team B go, oh, actually, I can modify that slightly. And then suddenly team C, D, and E are all like, that thing's great. And then you really start to get this rising tide through the organization. So yeah, I think learning and reuse are really key.
So when I think about the three ways of DevOps, as documented in the DevOps handbook, I think that we've got flow right. We've got the CI/CD pipeline right. We've probably got the feedback loops are correct because we've got that automation piece. But the third way, that continuous learning and improvement, is the bit that probably stops these teams from moving into the higher echelons of DevOps.
Absolutely. And I think this is one of the things where we see that, you know, people are messy and difficult. And most people didn't join the tech industry because they were really good at working with people. And so when it comes to like, you know, a socio-technical sort of program like DevOps, you look at those three ways from the way Gene originally described them, you know, feedback loops. It's not just actually about the tech and the automation, but if you put your average sysadmin, developer, you know, a tech person down and go, you can either go and build some feedback loops between people or between systems. Their inclination is often to focus on the systems. And I think unless you actually build those feedback loops from people as well, of, you know, having retrospectives within your team, making them visible to the rest of the organization, it's not just about observability of the systems, it's about observability of the people as well. And I don't think you get to that third way of continuous experimentation and continuous learning without having the feedback loops on the human side as well as the system side.
So as people are trying to evolve or trying to escape from the middle, What are the traditional blockers? I imagine, well, actually, you just alluded to one cultural blocker potentially. Are there technical blockers as well?
One of the main hypotheses that we went in going, we think that, you know, not that software is done, but that most of the technology in this space is good enough. And our limiting and bottleneck blocking factor is actually cultural and the human side. And we found a bunch of really, really fascinating things, I think, because we've often thrown around the word culture inside the DevOps space, you know, all the way back to culture, automation, measurement, sharing. You know, DevOps is a cultural movement. There was often culture tracks in DevOps days. And I ran across a really interesting thing by Simon Wardley, actually, you know, he of the Wardley Maps world, where he posted something going, you know, anthropologists don't have a definition of culture. And I was like, huh, I've been throwing this word around for quite a while, like, and spent a while diving into it and went, actually, this is something people really, really disagree with. And then when we started working with Matt Skelton and Manuel Pace around the team topologies work, because they came on as co-authors of last year's report, Manuel, I think, came out with this line where he was just like, I hate it when people are talking about culture inside organizations, because it's almost like they've given up on the problem. They don't really know what to actually focus on. And so one of the really interesting findings we found was that folks in the middle who are stuck blame culture a lot. But folks at the top level who have sort of succeeded, they don't think about those problems as cultural problems. They identified, we have a specific problem, whether it be lack of trust, unclear goals, you know, don't match responsibility to accountability. And those become their problems. And I think we're seeing a similar thing with DevOps, that the people who are succeeding at it stop using the word because they're focusing on more specific aspects of the model or the movement.
Interesting. And considering I felt like I just fell into the trap by saying culture, the C word.
Yeah, I do it all the time still. But I think I've definitely noticed that there's some negative implications. It's like climate, you know, like we can be paralyzed in 2022 thinking about climate change because that's just so much bigger than anything one individual can possibly impact. And I think culture inside a big organization has the same problem where people are like, well, we can't do that because the culture wouldn't allow it. Like it starts to feel like it's immutable and beyond any one person's ability to change. Whereas I genuinely think if you look at specific practices around something like enabling fast flow software delivery, and you go, what are the practices we need? What are the behaviors we need? Modifying those things drives culture. But if you just think about culture, it's very hard to work out, how do I get started?
That's a good point, actually. The word culture represents sort of a big elephant to eat. I used to have a friend who used to say that. And therefore, you don't know what the first step is. So if we remove that word, is there? Well, actually, there's a section in the report I think that says practical ideas for change or something like that. How do people get started? How do they break apart this into tangible problems?
Well, so there's I sort of have some good and bad news here, which is I think if you're in a big organization and you're relatively low in terms of the pecking order. The bad news I kind of have for you is there is only so much you can actually change. You know, a lot of big organizations are not, I think we sometimes have this myth in tech that the smart person with the right technology and the perfect manifesto can change the world inside a big organization. And I don't think that's impossible, but I do think it's very, very difficult. You need, support up and down the management chain. It's very difficult to do something in a big organization if senior leadership are violently against it. Sometimes that sounds a little like heresy, I think, in the DevOps world, but you have a sphere of influence you can operate in, and you can probably push against the boundaries of that, but you probably can't smash it entirely. I mean, some people can, but if you are that sort of person, you're probably not working in a really large traditional enterprise either, because that's not the personality and sort of mindset. So I'd say the things for us have always been, that we found from looking at the report were, really focus on, what are the things stopping you from delivering software quickly? What are your processes? Have you actually re-examined those? Because one of the things we've seen over and over again is that existing processes, they're like organizational scar tissue. You know, something went wrong once and someone goes, hey, let's fix that by having a meeting before we actually pull the trigger on actually deploying that thing next time. And before you know it, suddenly it takes 3 months to actually do anything because you're having to step all the way through the process. I think what we're terrible at in sort of large scale IT organizations is going, we've actually advanced. We have a new technical capability, like we were talking about DevSecOps earlier. Like, rather than pausing the whole organization for an audit at regular intervals, why don't we just have the security team collaborate with the folks who are doing all of the automation and management and going, let's just move to a place where we have continuous compliance rather than actually pausing the business at regular intervals. And I think that sort of process re-examination is something anyone can do at any part of an organization, and it has a really huge impact on both culture and evolution.
So a question I have is, you talked about what DevOps is. Could you say what DevOps isn't?
Oh, absolutely. This is one of my favorite topics. So one of the things I was going to say to, I often advertise this to folks or suggest it. We can be in a little bubble inside these podcasts of people who are highly engaged with this space. If you want to break out and have a sense of what the sort of middle, you know, dark matter of IT thinks of this, go to Reddit's DevOps subreddit. There's a lot of really great people there, but you're also seeing the real mass market interpretation of what DevOps actually is, or people who are just breaking into the field, perhaps from software engineering or end user desktop support, and they're asking questions about what this thing is. So the one that I absolutely and utterly despise that happens at all is a DevOps engineer is someone who's care and feeding of a CI/CD system, like where they essentially, they run Jenkins or they run Travis or whatever, or CircleCI or whatever, and they're responsible for it, and they basically just get asked by developers and operations folks to do things, they implement them, and there's no real sort of people interaction or friction removal. Now, I think build engineering is a really, really important job in terms of delivering software, in terms of managing and caring and feeding CI/CD systems, but calling that DevOps engineering, I think, is a misnomer. Like, I think it both makes build engineering somewhat invisible as a discipline, but I think also doesn't actually reflect what DevOps was meant to be about, which was meant to be about people interactions. And I think CI/CD systems are really important for streamlining team interactions, but not if you just go and shove it in a little silo on its own and go, hey, those people over there, they're DevOps.
It's fascinating you say that. There's a really interesting bar graph you've got in the report that shows the identifying as DevOps teams went up and then suddenly went back down again.
Yeah, we are definitely past peak DevOps team. And I have to say, like, back on the symbols and signifiers point, like when the whole original discussion happened of is DevOps a job title, I was violently, fervently on the side of no, it's not, it's a way of working. But again, you know, if you're in a big organization, you're trying to indicate that this team is trying to work in a different way, I can see why people ended up inventing DevOps engineers. I do think DevOps team is particularly, it's not useful at all. And it's because it's fragmented so much. If you walk into an org that you've never really worked with before and someone says, I work on the DevOps team, that could be the CI/CD team. It could be a team who all they do is everyone else is on-premise, but they're the ones who are in the cloud. It could be a team who are actually doing consulting on all the other teams of how to make them be better at DevOps. Or it could just be the IT team and the operations team renaming itself because, honestly, all their salaries went up a bit, which I actually think is great for people. But I think because it's so fragmented, it's the descriptive utility has dropped to just about zero, and so we should just stop doing it.
I think the same could be said for DevSecOps as well. DevSecOps engineer, describe that role for me, please, yeah. Because I haven't got no clue.
It's funny, we've alluded a lot to discussions of teams, and actually it's interesting what you mentioned about what you can do for change and then the existence of teams. They kind of go hand in hand, I think, in that, and actually you've reminded me of a very... and probably get in trouble for quoting, there's a controversial figure in Canada, Jordan Peterson, who actually says, don't try and change the world if you haven't cleaned up your room. That's a reasonable statement if we're talking about making vast enterprise-level culture change. If you can make tiny contributions to the way your team behaves in a way that is adherent to the benefits and the maturity of DevOps, you can actually do an awful lot at a very distributed level. And that kind of, I guess, I'll just leave you to comment on that for a moment.
Well, I think that is true, but I think there's also a bunch of other sort of environmental factors that are sort of needed there. Like, if you have a really fear-driven, antagonistic organization where, you know, business units are kind of warring with each other, that sort of sharing of information across organizational boundaries just doesn't actually happen. So I think in a reasonably happy and reasonably healthy organization, I do think that setting an example and showing off that something can be done in a certain way can have a really powerful impact. But I do think it actually requires support from above you as well, because, and I'm using, you know, hierarchies in a very sort of traditional sense here, but I think this is where I think there are enough people, perhaps the most stale male and pale executives are sort of starting to age out of the industry somewhat, and we're not quite getting that boundary between pre-internet and post-internet that we used to have, I think, in terms of management layers. But I think we are at a point now where in a lot of organizations, if you are reasonably visible about having worked in a different way that is better, people above you will kind of pick up on that, even if it's just out of pure selfish reasons of going, you know what, I can hitch my horse to this wagon and actually progress my own career this way. So I do think it's possible, but I think it's very difficult to do in the face of a sort of more hostile organization. And there's a few of those I work with where it's just very difficult for people to provide that example because there's so much mistrust and sort of a lack of visibility across the organization, even, I think, really inhibits that.
Do you think that mistrust and that fear is associated with the fear of change? Or do they feel like making baby steps into something that is new, like DevOps, seems interesting and fascinating and great water cooler conversation early on in the process, but when they get into the middle, they start to feel that they're introducing risk because of the sheer amount of change, both technological and philosophical?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is one of the things that we found from the report, that fear of change and, you know, fear of risk was a really huge factor in inhibiting folks from moving beyond the middle stages. But at the same time, that group were the same people who were more likely to be following practices that we know are risky, like, you know, changes only being deployed every 3 months, requiring a change window, requiring a committee to approve. We know that this sort of big batch infrequent changes is actually much, much more risky for the organization.
So better the devil you know from their perspective.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it's also, you know, at this point in 2022, if your organization is just starting to do DevOps, not to put too fine a point on it, but you're probably not in a good state as a business at that point. And, you know, I work with a few companies like that, and I have an awful lot of empathy for the folks on the ground, because they've often been going through several years of layoffs, of watching their friends but slowly be kicked off the island inside the organization. They know things are not healthy. They may be inside an industry that's struggling to adapt, and the whole digital transformation thing hasn't happened. And these people have, you know, often worked the same job for the last 10, 20 years. And it's not necessarily a passion, but it's a functional job. They've done the job they've been getting asked to do, and they're quite good at it. And then out of desperation, the organization is sort of grasping at straws to go, give me a new operating model that'll help me dig my way out of this mess. And so then you tell all these people, you know, you're telling a traditional Windows sysadmin who's, you know, and I mean really traditional, you know, who's, you know, a couple of batch files, a lot of GUI-driven administration. They've achieved a lot with their job. And then suddenly they're being told, you need to learn to code, you need to understand CI/CD, you need to understand unit testing, acceptance testing, smoke testing, observability. Like, it's a lot, and they're probably not getting paid anymore for it. So I actually have a lot of empathy for folks in that sort of situation, because I think they're the ones who are finding it most difficult. They're not being supported. They're just being sort of pushed to adapt. And it's not really clear, you know, if you're 5 years away from retirement, I'd probably drag my heels too in that situation.
Yeah, I also hear as well people say, we want to move to DevOps, and they force the cloud onto the organization.
And yeah, I think
you mentioned that in the report as well.
Yeah, this is one of the fascinating things I found, and why I've almost come to the point where in most conversations, if someone just uses the word cloud unadorned, I'm like, can we just poke into that? Like, what do we actually mean? Because I think in 2022, this is like saying computers. Like, it doesn't necessarily add a lot of explanatory power to what you're actually doing. But what we found in the report was that, I mean, everyone's in the cloud, and there's really obvious advantages to it, but most people are using the cloud like it's VMware they don't have to manage anymore. They're using traditional VMs. They're even regressing, and this is sort of one of my pet hates, because when we started Puppet, our enemy was golden images and shell scripts. You know, if you go back to that, it was like, how do you deploy your stuff? Well, we build an image. Well, how do you change it? Well, we just build the version 2 of that image. And you'd walk into these organizations that have image sprawl, And they just wouldn't be able to, they had no visibility or understanding of what was inside each of those images. And I think in many ways, we've moved to the cloud and gone, you know what? Provisioning is so much easier. You know what? I don't have to worry about data center bills, all of these things. I'm going to regress to using golden images. And, you know, Terraform is a great tool, but I think we've seen lots of people not necessarily adopt the sort of modern way of using it, but just going, you know what? I'm just going to blast out AMIs to Amazon and then use shell scripts to customize. And it feels like we've taken four steps forward and three steps back in that whole world. So yeah, so we found that most people who are in the cloud are not actually using it in a sort of elastic, scalable, taking advantage of it way. And a lot of that is because they haven't re-examined the processes. They've just sort of ported their existing processes and user experiences to the cloud. One of the great stories I have is one of my customers ended up having, when they adopted the cloud, they were used to a world where they would depreciate hardware assets for IT projects. They were back from that whole world where it was like, you're building a bit of software, it requires this much hardware, accounting-wise, we're going to depreciate it over this time period, and then they just plugged the cloud into that. And so basically, they got to depreciate cloud costs. And so at the end, hardware ends up being essentially free once you've fully depreciated it, and the operations team just have it in maintenance mode. Instead, this whole ops team's budget was being swallowed up by ongoing cloud costs that were considered to be free by the rest of the organization, and software devs didn't have to pay for it. So I think these sort of things like sound utterly insane when you describe them, but that sort of insanity is a bunch of slight missteps over the years will get you to that sort of spot.
Where is DevOps heading? Where is it going towards? What do you expect to see in the next reports that are produced?
This is a really timely question, actually, because we're trying to work out what we're actually going to focus this year's report on. I think it's really interesting that we're seeing that a lot of the folks who push the movement forward and advance these practices, DevOps is passe for them. I feel like I speak to two very distinct groups, and I'm sure DevSecOps is going to be in that state in a couple of years too, where it's old hat. They're like, yeah, I've moved on. Like, I'm just doing, that's just how I work. But then there's still this mass of people who are trying to work out how to adapt to the new world. And I don't think it's actually possible to build material easily these days that serves both of those groups really well. I would say I'm a massive believer in, you know, part of what the Team Topologies guys described of platform teams and platform engineering being the way of the future. And to bring that back to a security lens, I think we're seeing the folks who, say, have the massive long tail of log4shell vulnerabilities they're remediating, and they're finding that difficult because their software apps were all project-based funding and there's no dev who owns that thing anymore, and the poor ops team who's managing it doesn't even know who they talk to see if they can upgrade this library. Those folks are all finding that difficult. The ones, if you've adopted a platform model where you've actually got a small group of people who it's their job to build reliable components and provide reliable components to the rest of your organization, and they move up the stack in terms of abstraction, they don't really have this problem. So I think we see this constant, there's a constant cycle between centralization and decentralization that it feels like happens in terms of enterprise IT. And I think we're swinging towards a sort of better kind of centralization where it's there and it's available, but it's more flexible and you can compose it together with different APIs for developer velocity. But yeah, I genuinely think platform teams are going to be the way of the future. And I think people are going to start nailing building cloud platform teams in a way that most people I don't think have been very successful at so far.
Where can our listeners grab a copy of the State of DevOps report for 2021 or even previous years?
I think my sub question to that is, if I'm an organization and I want to be somehow, or if I'm an individual in an organization, I'd like to be involved or help with it or somehow give you my feedback.
Yeah, I think we'll just tell people, go ahead to puppet.com and it's on the front page. We're trying to put together a site at the moment. Oh, there it is. It's under there. We've done a decade of DevOps where we sort of did a little highlight of the last 10 years of reports. But yeah, do that. And yeah, totally. A call for help. I always love feedback and contribution.
All right. You're in trouble now because we're going to put that detail in the notes for the podcast. So if you're listening to this now, scroll down and we're going to have all of Nigel's intimate details there for you.
Well, thank you so much, Nigel, for coming along and giving us some very interesting insights into DevOps. If people want to get in touch with you, how will they do that?
So Nigel@puppet.com, one of the joys of joining a startup really early is you get in before the first name dot last name explosion. I also had it written in my contract at one point that we weren't to hire another Nigel, which was much easier in the US and But the name has somewhat fallen out of popularity anyway, so I don't think that clause is likely to be invoked. But yeah, hit me up at nigel@puppet.com or Nigel Kirsten on Twitter. Love feedback from folks on what would you love to see in the next State of DevOps Report, what the areas you'd like to hear about. And if you want to help out and you want to contribute in some way, this is a community effort. You know, there's a company behind it, but this is something we very much do because it feels like it's part of the community that feeds us and nurtures us and keeps us alive.
Thank you very much, Nigel.
Amazing. Thank you.
Thank you.